Hello everyone, welcome back to Shonky Lab. I'm Elton, and joining me to walk me through this wonderful, joyous topic of torture, it's Mr. Jim Moon.
Hello folks.
How you doing, man? You're looking forward to this?
Oh, I am. There's some interesting tales to be told. Don't be eating your dinner while listening, maybe, though.
Yeah, well, I've got a full stomach at the moment, so I'm a bit worried. It might end up on the floor later on.
That is possible.
Yeah. Oh, God. So we're going to talk about torture. Wow. Stuck in a room with Ed Sheeran and James Corden, I suppose, would be the worst one for me.
For a lot of people too, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so how do we get into this then? So what is torture? Is there like a defining word that would, or sentence that would kind of bring people into this then?
Well, I suppose there's a distinction to be made if we're talking about various historical practices. And so obviously there's just the general idea of torture, that you inflict pain on somebody else.
Right.
However, a lot of what we think of torture was actually just a criminal sentence. It was the punishment. Whereas I think these days, if we think of torture, we think of interrogation and the use of force and pain to extract information.
Yeah.
And so there is sort of a distinction there, for example, of, hanging, drawing and quartering, which famously happened to Guy Fawkes, that doesn't really count as torture, although a lot of people think it is torture. It's medieval and it's barbaric and, you know, people get their guts pulled out and burned in front of them. Mm. But that was his sentence for a crime.
Yeah, that's punishment, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So it's a bit there's a distinction, but there's obviously a bit of an overlap for like non-fatal, shall we say, punishments. Because it's the idea of the pain purifies the soul, or at least is a penance and a price to be paid for your misdeeds, and one enacted publicly. And that's the other important thing. These sort of vile punishments, you know, you remember they were spectacles, and they weren't away in dingy rooms no one knew about. They're often in the middle of the town centre, and it was a grand day out for everybody.
Yeah, it was, oh, well, there's a torture on at 4 o'clock. Okay, well, we'll keep our schedule clear so we can all mosey down. Are you bringing Catherine down as well? Yeah, yeah, we'll all go down there. Okay, great. We'll all see you there, and we'll go back for dinner after.
Yep, it was a great day out. I mean, you've heard the phrase money for old rope.
Mm-hmm.
That comes from when they'd hung a criminal. The executioner, one of the perks of his job for being an executioner, which wasn't a popular job, was that he could cut up and sell the rope and the noose as souvenirs to the crowd.
Wow.
And that is the original money for old rope.
That's brilliant.
There you go.
Yeah. I heard towing the line is like a naval one as well. If you didn't tow the line, then you'd end up on the end of a line, probably hanging off one of the masts or being dragged underneath the boat.
That's it, though, the old keel hauling.
Oh. See, the first time I was introduced to keel hauling, sorry, I can't get my words out, I was watching a program called, is it Black Sails? Yeah, I think it was Black Sails.
Oh, yes.
Now, I don't want to give anything away, but someone gets that done to them, and that's grim. I was that's gonna hurt. I didn't realize it was gonna be covered in barnacles and stuff.
Oh yes, very very nasty.
That is awful.
The only saving grace is it's happening in salt water, so the wounds would be cleansed. But.
But you're killed by a thousand cuts, really, aren't you?
Well, pretty much. That was the big danger with a lot of these sort of punishments, is they could be death sentences because of the high infection rates in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, so torture is very different from the actual punishment of a crime then, isn't it? It's more, well, would you say it's more for fun and spectacle than anything else?
Well, the thing is, with sort of torture to get information, that would have been public. Punishments mm-hmm. were. Now, there are various things we think of, like being sort of pilloried or flogged, that we think of as torture, but these would take place in the town square at the stocks. And, you know, part of the punishment was that it was public. Mm. Whereas, say, you're talking about the classic kind of medieval tortures of the thumb screws and the rack and all of that kind of thing, that had been happening in a cell somewhere without an audience.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. So that's the difference. Well, that's a line we can draw there anyway, certainly.
I wonder if the actual means of torture and the way that it's actually handed out to the person who's receiving it, it would be more harsh if it was behind closed doors, because, you know, there isn't an audience and people going, oh, maybe he shouldn't have done that, and people questioning what was going on.
Well, bizarrely, there was very strict laws about torture. I don't know, kind of we have a view of that it was absolutely rife because everyone in the past was a monster and stupid, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. Most people are quite surprised to learn that kind of actually for most of history, torture was illegal in England.
Right.
We did not allow it. And in states where it was allowed, in countries where it was allowed, there were strict rules laid down that torture was not to cause mutilation. It was not to cause death. If they thought a torturer was enjoying his work too much, he would be replaced and could be liable for punishment. The classic Spanish, well, not just the Spanish, there were actually many Inquisitions, but they had a rule that a person could be tortured once.
Oh.
Yes, it's a very interesting kind of thing, because a lot of our views of the past are, not just on torture, but on a lot of things, start from a point of smugness of we're better than them and we're a lot cleverer.
Yeah.
However, it's kind of, that's not always the case. People generally are the same, I find, yeah. and do things for the same reasons. And there's not that much between us and them. And in some cases, we're worse because we don't always have some of the strict codes. For example, no one alleged us torture now, but it happens. All the major governments do use it, which is very much secret and behind closed doors, and far more horrendous and sophisticated than what they used to do in medieval times.
Oh, wow.
Mm. I mean, the thing is, with sort of understanding kind of crime and punishment in the past, you have to sort of look at this in the context of the legal systems they had.
Yeah.
Now, yes, they had some horrendous punishments for things. You know, you could be placed in the stocks, which I know that sounds, you get put in the stocks, people throw fruit at you. But, you know, what you forget is you might be in the stocks for like a week.
Yeah.
Locked in one position. And in some cases, in a rather vulnerable position where any passing pervert could
yeah,
with do anything they like to you. Yeah, yeah, exactly. But the thing is, on balance to, you know, like being boiled in oil and hang drawn and quartering and all of this, you have to remember that until very recently, there was no such thing as the police.
Mm-hmm.
Some places might have a dedicated guard, or there might be an informal hue and cry, as they say, you know, like a volunteer service. If a crime happened, people would rouse themselves and go on a chase. But basically, no policing. So most crimes you did get away with, or rather there was no one to enforce the law as, you know, per se. So there was little deterrent.
Mm.
And also in medieval courts, they had very, very high standards of proof, higher than us now. Because they had like no forensics to fall back on. And so everything, if someone went to court, they needed solid eyewitness accounts saying, yes, it was him that done that. And in a lot of cases, that's not always possible. So the severity of the punishments and the torture and execution, I think you've got to weigh up on balance with the effectiveness of the legal systems of the time.
Yeah. Oh, it's so interesting. Yeah. I didn't realize all this.
Yeah. It does kind of not excuse work, but you get an understanding of why, if you did get caught, you might be punished very brutally indeed, mm-hmm. and very publicly. But that was it. You know, it was the kind of deterrent they had.
I see.
Yeah, and also even like, you know, being sent to prison. Prisons in the past, you know, yes, there were some that were the typical medieval dungeons you're all picturing, but if you had some money, you could pay for something a bit better. Mm-hmm. And if you had, you know, not even that much money, you can actually effectively be kind of under house arrest in a dubious hotel, basically. You just couldn't leave. Though you might be allowed out for the night to the local inn with the jailer and go and pick up some birds and gamble, and then you have to go back to the prison afterwards. You know, is that kind of, you know, how bad prison was, you know, depending on how much money you had or how much money your relatives had. And in a lot of cases, you know, people just said, look, here, just have some money. Can I go? Oh, all right then. Oh, you escaped me, Lord. You know, but this is why the punishments were so severe, because of the poor quality of the justice system, the police system, and the prison system at the time.
And some of these things that I've seen, you know, when you go into one of these torture museums where they have all the stuff on display, a lot of that is just deterrent, really, isn't it? Someone's come up with a wacky idea of hurting someone, you may get this. But it really turns out a lot of it is just there for deterrent and was never used.
Well, a lot of it was made up afterwards
by
people in the 19th century going, oh, they were terrible in the past, you know.
And oh, they were created for museums.
Oh, yeah, they were absolutely fake. I mean, the famous one is the Iron Maiden.
Yep.
The big, big iron casket. It's got spikes on the inside, which can be slowly extended while you're in, and they were arranged in such a way so they wouldn't pierce major organs, and you'd live for days just be speared in this device. However, there is not one record of anyone ever being sentenced to being put in an Iron Maiden. There are no Iron Maidens, you know, dating back from before the 19th century, and is widely now thought they were basically invented in the 19th century by the early tourist trade.
Okay.
Because the 19th century is where people start getting interested in history properly. Mm-hmm. But also you have things like the Gothic novels kick off, and there's a big romance about the past and medievalism and the Dark Ages before the Enlightenment. Yeah. And people started visiting old sites, and that included old castles. And some enterprising people started inventing various devices that were in the torture chambers in the dungeons of the castle.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah. And really, when you think about the Iron Maiden, actually, it's totally implausible. Because to have a device that, you know, pierces the body so it doesn't hit any major organs, you'd have to be able to configure that for every user.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? You'd be tailor-made. Or you'd be adjustable, you know what I mean? Kind of up a bit, down a bit. Oh, no, no, it'll go in his eye. Take it down. He's a bit shorter than last week. You know, it's nonsense. When you start thinking about it, you realize what utter cobblers it is.
Yeah.
As it was, it's believed that the Iron Maidens, that are supposedly real, they're actually based on an earlier punishment called had various names, but one's called the drunk's overcoat. Where basically, if you're caught being drunk, you'd be strapped into a barrel and paraded around the streets, and people could just take the piss out of you, basically, for being a fool.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's various versions of this, and some where you're made of like metal and steel rather than just you being lashed into a barrel. And it's believed that's where the origin, or rather the inspiration for the Iron Maiden originally came from.
Right. So,
but that's not the only one. There is actually, as I've dug into this, I found quite a few famous torture devices that actually were invented Sometimes surprisingly recently, and that turn up in top 10 horrible historical things people did lists all over the internet.
Oh, man. Okay. Yeah, I've dived into a couple of these lists. I'm guessing a lot of it is just utter guff, really, then, isn't it?
Well, some is, some aren't. Degenerate, the more elaborate and bloodthirsty it sounds, the more likely it is to be absolute cobblers.
Okay. All right. Well, can I ask you about one then?
Yes. Yes. Go for it.
Okay. So, crocodile shears. Have you heard of these?
Yes. Not be confused with the Jimmy Nail song. That's crocodile shoes.
Oh, I want him to come back just to make that song. So these are like long-handled pliers with possible spiky ends to them, and you heat them up, yes. and you can use them to pinch your subject from afar with a hot blade, basically.
Well, yes, according to most accounts, it alleges this was a punishment reserved for regicides, which were people who attempted to kill a monarch, not right. People who killed someone called Reg. The shears were applied to a certain part of the male anatomy.
Yeah, I did read that. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, I discovered the origin of crocodile shears.
Okay.
And it dates quite a way back to the early 2000s.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah. The first mention of them appeared on a Wikipedia page, which stayed up for quite a while before someone noticed and said, hang on, this has got absolutely no sources whatsoever.
Oh, really?
And since then, it is spread out everywhere, and it is all over top 10 lists of medieval executions and tortures and bad things people did in the past.
Okay, so it's basically the sword generation has got their dirty little mitts on these sort of things, found drawings, maybe created these olden, ye olden day drawings and stuck them on the internet.
Well, there's a photo of alleged ones that appear. But I think this was just kind of some kind of novelty pliers people had made in the shape of a crocodile.
Yeah.
They're not like the spiked tube of the actual description of the alleged torture instrument.
Right.
So it is complete bunk, basically. I mean, and very recent bunk at that.
That is, yes. Early 2000s, my word.
I know. So I think it was 2007 this article appeared with very few sources.
It goes to show if you just put like an olden day photo, a drawing or a sketch that looks very, very old, along with a bit of text, just making some utter guff up, you can get away with it. And people go, oh, there's an old drawing there. It must be true.
Oh, I come across this all the time. I mean, it's particularly rife at the minute. I say the minute, the 21st century. But you know what I mean? There's all kinds of these things, the kind of crackpot theories with no evidence whatsoever, or things just blatantly made up that get printed once on the internet and then just get copy and pasted and sort of become accepted fact until someone says, hang on a minute, this is bollocks. Mm. Remember, we did a while back, we did a show on pirates.
Yes.
And there's a theory that's all over the internet about how eye patches, they weren't for covering up a missing eye. They were to keep one eye in darkness. So when the pirates went below deck, they would sweep the patch over and they'd have one eye accustomed to the dark ready. Complete cock. Didn't exist. It never happened. No evidence for it. But it's everywhere. Anything on pirates, that damn thing turns up.
Yep.
As I say, in some ways, I think we're worse than... You know, we are stupider than the people in the past sometimes.
I think we are, yes. It's so easy just to fool us because we see it on the internet and we see that as the home of truth and justice and the correct way to read stuff. And we read into it and we believe it.
Absolutely. And when you dig into a lot of these things, you do find kind of, actually, the evidence is a bit, it's not there, is it?
No, that's true.
Where's it gone? But that's so, very true of torture, because we like to look back at the past and feel good about ourselves. We go, well, look at them. They didn't have soap and they pulled each other's breasts off with iron pincers called a spider. Ha ha, we're much better than them. It's like, no, we're not, because they didn't have breast rippers, that they weren't a thing. That's completely made up bollocks as well. So, you know, who's the stupid one? Yeah. Have your soap as a comfort, idiot, you know?
Yeah, that's right. So what others are fake that you quite enjoy?
There's another one that's very famous called the Pear of Anguish, or sometimes called the Spanish Pear.
Yes, I know of this one, yes, because I saw on YouTube, I am subs to someone called Alex Steele, and he's a blacksmith in Norwich. Somewhere in Norwich, anyway, or Norfolk, anyway. And he saw this and created his own one out of steel. And I think it was the very first time I'd ever seen one of these pairs of anguish. And yeah, he replicated it in his own workshop, and it looked beautiful. And I was like, oh, I really like that. And it sounds terrifying, doesn't it?
Well, yes, yeah. For the listeners, imagine kind of like literally a pear shape of metal that's split into four sections, which are attached to arms and a mechanism, which you turn either with a lever or often with a key for that nice, you know, clockwork vibe. And when you turn the key, these sections slowly come open. And the idea of the Spanish pear was that you inserted this into an orifice, a mouth, or a lower ones, maybe, and you slowly wound it open, causing a great deal of pain and destruction.
Wow. Well, on some websites that we may know, that is a fetish. I'm sure it is.
If someone can imagine it, someone's getting off on it.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
that's how these things work.
So is that bunkum as well then?
It is. But basically, there's no account of these ever actually being used. There's no records of anyone being sentenced to this being used or having it done on them. I believe the earliest reference is something like a late 18th or 19th century, where a similar device, also called a choke pear, is described. Mm-hmm. However, this wasn't mentioned as a torture device. It was mentioned as a device used by criminals in Holland, and it was kind of like an expanding ball gag, basically, for people, you know, who are being robbed,
yeah,
by Dutch highwaymen. However, no such device has been found, and you seem to get a lot more mentions of it in the 19th century, and then some start turning up in medieval displays. And it's like the Iron Maiden, these things, you know, it believes it comes from this sort of dubious sort of anecdote from an 1811 book about Dutch robbers and their choke pears. And then by the 19th century, you've got the Pear of Anguish, or the Spanish Pear.
Yeah.
And then, and you can see them in museums.
I suppose once it makes it into a museum, then people like us on the internet, seeing it on the internet, oh, it must be true. If it's displayed into a museum and you're told that this is what was used, then you will believe it. It's especially up until like the mid 80s and early 90s. That was the place to go and find out about all this horrific stuff. And sometimes I suppose if you are going into a torture museum, you want to be horrified about these things as well, don't you?
Well, absolutely. We're very ready to believe the absolute worst of people.
Yeah.
Things like the choke pears, I mean, it appeared in like, there's a very famous Victorian reference book, you know, Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable, a very erudite book, and they're mentioned in that. But interestingly, even in that, that says it was a device used by robbers in Holland, rather than something used by medieval torturers. That's something that came sort of a bit later on. It's It's used by Alexandre Dumas, one of his novels, 20 years after. It appears in a prison scene there. And that's where, you know, these ideas sort of, you know, spill out. It's in when they hit pop culture, either in a museum or they get mentioned in a story or in a play, mm-hmm. or for us in a film. And that's how we get a lot of our fake history.
Right. And do you reckon it's just our psyche that want to be horrified? We want to see the pain that we would never have inflicted on us, but we like to think that it's been inflicted on someone else.
I think so. I mean, I think kind of these sort of tales of torture, they sort of, they operate kind of on a level that's somewhere between the kind of low end of the true crime genre and campfire stories kids tell mm-hmm. each other. You know what I mean? They're short, they're brutal, there's no real narrative. It's just, you know, it's just, you know, things you know, we like to tell each other to gross each other out and we go, ooh, you know. And there'll always be a market for that. Mm-hmm. As it is, there is plenty of stuff that is real that make you go, ooh. But for some reason, we need to invite really, you know, these extra elaborate ones like the Choke Pear or the Iron Maiden or the Iron Spider that was supposedly used to pull women's breasts off. Absolute fucking rot. It's never happened. Or the Crocodile Shears, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Kind of full of stupid details who, you know, reserve for regicide, yet there's not a single king attempted assassination or king killer who was ever sentenced to have one of these things used on them. You know, but it's just, it's a good story because it makes you wince.
Yeah. Well, the guards went, oh, we get to use these crocodile shears. They've been never been used before. Right, guys, let's go get them off, polish them off.
It's bizarrely elaborate. As I say, because there's plenty of actually real life horrible things that were used in torture. Why we have to invent like extra elaborate ones, I do not know.
Because we're idiots. That's
why. I think so. I mean, our favorite one is the head crusher. Which the oldest source I can find for it is a web page. There's a picture of one that's supposedly in a museum somewhere, but it looks a bit modern to my liking. It looks like it was made in someone's garage in the 60s, to be honest. Yeah. And it's like a skull cap that's attached to like a vise, the big, you know, big screw to turn it down. Mm-hmm. And supposedly this would go over someone's head, and then it would, you know, you turn the big handle and it would slowly crush people's heads. And it's kind of, that's not really pretty ideal for torture, really. But hilariously, this web page, you know, it said, you know, some models had little cups at the front to catch the eyes when they squeeze popped out.
Oh, jeez.
And it's like, oh, fuck off.
Yeah, some 17-year-old came out with that, didn't
I know.
They?
This is just like this is absolute Tommy rot.
I feel like I've been pulled in by each and every single thing that I've looked on the internet then. That's not good. None of this was true then.
Well, some of it was. Let's do some of the true ones.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's take the one, the famous one, the thumb screw. Thumb screws were a thing.
Mm-hmm.
They were very popular because they were very effective. Because, you know, you have lots of nerves in your fingers. If you put a fence, you actually have a small vise to put someone's fingers in, you know, you can get them to talk pretty quick. It's no one's quite sure where they originated. Some people sort of say actually they didn't actually reach England until after the Spanish Armada, and they spread slowly. And certainly it's kind of the earliest references in English to a thumbscrew date from around them, from the late 1600s, where they were called thumbkins. And piddywinks. Yeah. Which doesn't make them quite so terrifying.
Yeah, well, I would also imagine if you need a contraption for torture, you're going to want to use as little resources as possible. So thumbscrews would be, they will be compact, they'll be tiny. They don't have to be elaborate. They don't have to be like one of these, was it Rude Gold, whatever it may, things where you push the balls down and...
spikes come out of here and...
That's
and
it, yeah.
A bird comes out and pecks your head and...
That's right, yeah. It doesn't need to be elaborate like that. It needs to be very simple, pocket size.
Mm.
And you can just whip out the thumbscrews, put your two thumbs in, squeeze it down, and just leave them for an hour and see how they cope with that. And yeah, I'll go back 10 minutes later and, yeah, just give it another half a turn. There we go. Oh, yeah. I'm going to get some answers in a minute. And then you take it off, wipe it down, put it back in your pocket. It's done. It's nice. It's simple.
Absolutely. This is why they were widely used. And the thing is, you can cause a lot of pain, but not a lot of damage.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of very intense pain to get people to talk. And I'm guessing the thumbscrew was probably a development of a very old torture, the boot. Which essentially, there's various versions of it. The most simple one was kind of literally just strapped bits of wood around your foot with a cord and then just pulled it tighter and tighter and tighter and just gave your foot a good old squeeze.
Ooh.
Later on, they made metal ones that were more sophisticated. But you know what I mean? Again, the foot, toes, lots of nerves. You don't have to apply a lot of pressure to get an excruciating pain and getting people singing like canaries.
No. I think if I was shown any of these, I'd be giving up all the information that they want even before they got these thumb screws on or any sort of boot on or what's the other one I saw? The Heretic's Fork as well. It's like, oh, so simple. And I can believe that one because... it's very clear and simple in design. And so once again, you can put it in a pocket. This fork is designed to go through the chin and into like the breastbones and just torture it. Yeah, it straddles the chin and the breastbone and you can't then drop your head down. Otherwise, you're going to be pierced either through the chin or through the breastbone. It's simple. It doesn't require someone to be there. It doesn't require someone to work for weeks and weeks in an ironmonger or get someone huge amounts of money to build this either. It's really simple. You can just adapt it from a fork, basically, couldn't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, that's I think these a common thread in the in the actual historical torture devices. The ones that are very easy to lash up.
Yeah.
I mean, another one, devastatingly simple, very, very painful, was what's called the Spanish donkey. And the Spanish donkey was, you know, you've seen those horses in gyms.
I've just found a picture of one. Yes.
Yeah. It's like a gym horse, but instead of a big round leather pad, it's just a big triangle. You know, he's just a big triangular plank, and basically they just sat you on there and left you there, and that's bloody uncomfortable. And the longer you sit on it, the worse it gets.
Didn't they put weights on their ankles and legs as well to pull the victim?
Yes,
down?
But also to stop them falling off and getting off. but that was. Commonly used, very simple. A similar one, a bit crueler, was what's called the Strapado, which basically is a mobile manacle set. Because the idea of this torture was they literally just lashed your hands together, usually bound your back, and then winched you up and dangled you. And after a while, the pressure on your shoulder blades is excruciating.
Oh.
And there's various different ways of doing it, mainly involving the way you tied the person up. But basically, it was an elaborate and mobile form of manacles because, you know, we've all seen the dungeon cartoons with people in manacles and they're not chained up to stop them escaping. That was a torture. They just hung you up in manacles and, you know, your arms and leg joints have to take your own weight. And after a while, that's very uncomfortable indeed.
Yeah.
I'll say it's that simplicity. I mean, we didn't, you know, I mean, I, when we talk about torture, and, you know, we can debunk various things. Mm-hmm. At the same time, that doesn't mean we didn't do torture. We did do torture. But the fact is, basically, just a couple of sticks and a bit of gravity. You don't need elaborate saw-style devices.
No. Well, with the manacles, all you need to do is take a couple of links out, and then you start applying stress positions, then, don't you?
Pretty much, yeah. Now, as I said earlier, like, torture was illegal in England most of the time. However, they used to get around these torture rules by doing something called walking the prisoner. And again, this is a form of torture, but again, it is very simple, which is basically every 2 hours you go in, wake the prisoner up and body them, walk them around the room. And you do this over a couple of days so they don't get a wink sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And you just break them like that. And, you know, that's still used now. In fact, that's a very common technique in modern day torture, is sleep deprivation, either by, now we can just, don't have to bodily walk you around the room, you've just got speakers to blast atrocious noises at high decibel volume and keep you awake that way, off, or very bright lights. But, you know what I mean? It's the same principle.
Yeah.
You know, after being deprived of sleep for a day or so, most people are just anything to let them sleep, and they're disorientated, they're very vulnerable, they're not thinking straight, and, you know, their capacity to deceive and lie and withhold information is crumbling, literally.
Yeah, they need to get that sleep, don't they? It will kill you eventually as well, won't it? Sleep deprivation.
Well, chronic fatigue will kill you, but also before that kicks in, no one's really done too much experimentation, because the ones who did, they found it was so dangerous. But actually disrupting people's sleep so they don't get proper dream cycles can have a very, very severe and lasting and even perhaps permanent mental damage.
Oh, wow.
Dreaming is very, very important, a very important part of sleep. We need to dream to stay sane. Yeah. And in experiments where they've disrupted people's dream cycles, generally they've had to call them off and they don't do them anymore because it causes psychological damage.
Wow, you can really mess with someone's psyche and the rest of their life just by removing that sleep. And it's kind of their defrag moment, isn't it? And if you don't get to defrag a computer, then, yeah, it's going to go wonky and not work anymore.
Mm. Yeah, so again, but very simple. You don't need a big, like, you know, gothic dungeon full of half a ton of ironmongery.
Well, that's expensive as well, isn't it?
And impractical, you know. I mean, contrary to the popular, you know, belief and what you've seen in tons of movies, you know, not everywhere had a huge local castle with a torture chamber and a dungeon. You know what I mean? If you were, you know, arrested for a crime, you were probably in a spare room at an inn or kept in a stable until the authorities could come and put you on trial.
Mm-hmm.
And like in England, most places, they didn't have like a local court that sat every week. You had, like, you've heard of like the court circuit in the old days. It was literally a touring circuit of judges who, the country was divided into so many territories, and there were travelling judges that went from place to place. And it was roughly kind of quarterly. A team of judges come to your town, and you get everyone who'd been arrested, and they'd have like a week's worth of trials to try everybody, and that would be that for that quarter.
Yeah.
So, you know, this idea of sort of cells and dungeons, it's a lot of it is just gothic tosh, and
it's romance, really, isn't it?
It is romance, you know what I mean? It's kind of, I mean, I don't doubt, you know, there were unscrupulous lords and ladies who imprisoned people in their castles for their own perverse reasons. But, you know, probably like today, that's probably a rarity and, you know, the mark of a serial killer rather than a socially accepted practice.
there will be people that do get off on this, though.
Oh, undoubtedly. I mean, yeah, there are kind of very infamous historical figures. Gilles de Rais in France, who was a knight who supported Joan of Arc, alleged to have killed over 400 people, mainly children, in his castle for his own perverse desires and worship of Satan.
Really?
Yep.
Whoa.
Likewise, Countess Elizabeth Báthory in Eastern Europe supposedly killed hundreds of girls and bathed in their blood, because that was her thing, or so it was alleged. So, you know, but this is more kind of, you know, rich serial killing rather than crime and punishment.
That's right, yeah. So you mentioned the Spanish donkey, which is just a pyramid where someone sits across the pyramid and is basically using gravity to draw them down.
Mm.
And just a very uncomfortable seat, really, isn't it? So you've heard of the Judas cradle, which is a very, very similar premise, but instead of like a triangular board which you sit across, it's a pyramid that you sit on.
Yes.
Now, is this where someone has seen a real thing like the Spanish donkey and gone, well, do you know what? Let's make it a little bit worse and let's insert this up the anus.
It's rather, from what I looked into, I found kind of, there's a lot of talk about the Judas chair or Judas cage, but it doesn't seem particularly well attested outside rather lurid accounts.
Right, okay, so this could be like fable where they've seen one thing and gone, well, let's make this a little bit worse.
I think so, because, I mean, the Spanish donkey, I mean, that's its famous name, but, you know, it was used in France, it was used all throughout Europe. It's a very, very ancient form of torture.
Mm.
And it was even, you know, a variety of it was used in the American Civil War to discipline troops, called riding the rail, which was, you know, basically a similar thing. It was just a big, long, pointy rail they'd sit you in, and that'd just be lashed up between some trees, you know.
Once again, very, very simple, isn't it? Why go exactly. Elaborate?
Yeah, you don't need to add all these bells and whistles. And generally, I think in torture, when you find bells and whistles, you're starting to look at someone with a tourist attraction somewhere down the line or a web page.
yeah, that's right, yeah. So, okay, what about like the bronze bull? So I've read about this where you would have like a fire underneath this big elaborate bronze ball and you'd put someone in there to torture them. Basically, you'd pickle them and boil them alive. Is that once again absolute guff?
Well, it's one of those that the bronze bull or brazen bull, sometimes called the Sicilian bull. I mean, that goes back to classical times, to ancient Greece.
Mm.
So it's very hard to tell whether this was actually ever used or whether it's a story.
Right.
I mean, to my mind, I tend to think kind of, especially from the classical things where like had this particular brazen bull had like various tubes in it, so the screams of the victim inside would come out the bull's mouth and this kind of claptrap that I just kind of think is it's that's a story. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, boiling people in water or oil or sitting them in a pot and pouring boiling oil or hot tar onto their feet or hands, this simple, easy torture, a lot of that. You didn't need to go to the expense of building a giant brass bull.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Well, once again, I'm drawn in. I'm like, oh, wow, someone made a brass bull. Brilliant. Yeah, but you got to have a lot of money to ask someone to create and fabricate a brass bull.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, it's claimed that the Romans persecuted several Christian martyrs by this way, but, you know, These are accounts written centuries later. and likewise, it's always kind of, a lot of these things you find, it's a case of history being written by the victor and wanting to portray their enemies in the past in the worst possible light and ascribing all kinds of horrible torture and, barbarism to them. I mean, we've all heard of the Spanish Inquisition. Now, actually, I mean, the Spanish Inquisition did work a terrifying operation. There actually were several Inquisitions, and yes, people were tortured under their watches and were executed. Mm-hmm. However, their reputation, shall we say, has been exaggerated by English and American scholars and Protestant scholars, because the English was Catholic.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the death count of all the people they burned in recent years has been drastically cut down, because actually going through the records, you find, you know, such and such, you know, was burned. And on a lot of the counts, they had an E next to the name. And historians worked out the E meant they were burnt in effigy. So the person wasn't actually burned at the stake, but an effigy of them was burned in the stake as a public humiliation.
Oh, okay.
And that sort of brought down the death count quite considerably. It's history being written by the victors. And again, it's kind of, when we talk about torture, I think, you know, again, as I said, we like to look down in the people on the past. And so we do ascribe to them kind of more brutality than there maybe actually was. And certainly we've over-elaborated what brutality there was there to kind of, you know, Batman villain sort of levels in some cases with these elaborate gadgets.
Yeah, we're a sucker for that sort of thing, though, aren't we? Yeah.
Well, a brazen bull's a lot cooler than just kind of, well, they took him to a cell and hit him with sticks.
Yeah.
Which is more the truth, you know.
Yeah. Well, it has that folklore of you could hear the screams and it came out the face of the bull, and it was like the bull was speaking to us and wallowing to us as well. It's like, it's so poetic.
Well, I'd say it's like, you know, cinematic, as we call it, you know.
Yeah.
It's images that, you know, fire the imagination far more than just ropes and sticks do and an uncomfortable seat.
Yeah.
You know? But, as I say, the real torture, when you look at it, is horrendous, but it's often just shockingly simple and, you know, simple and direct. And, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to make light of torture, and there certainly was a lot of torture did occur as both punishment and particularly for extracting confessions. I mean, the peak of torture in England was the 1600s and 1700s, when there was basically a lot of political instability and an awful lot of plots to overthrow the government of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Whether this was Catholics plotting or Protestants or witches even. But when we look back, we tend to see witchcraft or religion, but actually what we're talking about is treason and national security. And that's why so many people got tortured, because it was against, you know, trying to root out people who were plotting to assassinate the powers that be. And not a lot has changed. That's where we still use torture now, for acts of terror and suspected plots to overthrow the state.
Yeah,
that's where we still think it's permissible to torture people.
I found the Scold's bridle, basically an iron muzzle that would over people's faces and probably have like some sort of metal lollipop that pushes down on the tongue as well and stops people from actually talking. And I think I read that it was punishment for shrews or scolds, basically women of lower class whose speech were deemed righteous or troublesome.
Yes, also though, I mean, according to the historical records, a lot of men got put in them as well.
Yeah.
For libel and slander.
Ah, okay.
As well. So it's kind of any sort of, what do you call it, antisocial speech.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things. It sounds like that could be like another Iron Maiden. But basically, it's kind of like a facial stocks, really.
It is, isn't
and,
it? Yeah.
When you look at the actual, there are records of people, you know, being sentenced to, you know, be fitted with these things. And but, you know, it's kind of, it was a ritualized thing. It wasn't kind of, you weren't just stuck in a dungeon, put that on your head, there you go, that'll learn you. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, you put this on, you were paraded around the streets, and, you know, once you'd gone through that, they took it off again.
Yeah.
And it's that public humiliation.
And that's the point where the actual public can dish out their own punishment on the, and that is a form of torture then, wouldn't it? Because,
well, that's it, yeah. You have the whim of the crowd, really.
Yeah, you have the people scorning you and swearing at you and throwing stuff at you and remembering you as well.
Well, that's it. you know, that's a lot of these things. It's that demonstrative justice in action.
Yeah.
And it's kind of why kind of a lot of the punishments were kind of quite cruel and often bloody. But they were public as well. That's the big difference, I think, with say torture, which is more, you know, for getting information, which is behind closed doors.
Mm.
But yeah, that was part of it, public was the important factor, really, that, you know, you were seen as a wrong'un, but also other people saw what happened to wrong'uns.
Yeah, that's right. Any ones that impress you? I know that sounds like a really morbid question, but you're like cracking your knuckles going, oh, wait, I've got this one. Are there any ones that made you go, oh dear, and actually turned out to be true?
Well, I think the one that is kind of like probably the most elaborate and the one that's sort of most familiar but was actually widely used was the rack, which, you know, was a quite an ingenious way, because again, it was kind of scaling up, you know, the boot and the thumb screw. And it was the fairly simply mechanically, but very devastating. you know, and it's kind of, you know, the rack is kind of, it's one of those iconic tortures, which, you know, when I start researching, you think, oh, it's going to be bollocks, isn't it? But no, you know, the rack was used a lot.
Really?
Yeah. It was, you know, a favorite, you know, punishment to get people to confess. And I think a lot of, and certainly there's accounts as well of the rack was used as a psychological torture. Literally, you know, you'd have one prisoner on the rack and then you'd bring in another one who was next in line and said, come watch this.
Yeah.
And you'd get them to confess just by seeing the other guy on the rack.
Yeah, gotcha.
And that's kind of, that's sort of quite clever. What I do is interesting when you look into torture is they find the people in the past are more sophisticated than you think, and there's an awareness of a psychological element to the torture.
Well, they want answers, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. But also you find a lot of why it's actually illegal and why there's very strong regulations for, you know, the powers be you were using torture, is that even back like in medieval times, you've got writers going, yeah, but if we're putting this guy through hell and we're poking him and burning him and putting him in manacles, can we trust what he says? Is the information we get from the torture sincere? And that was a debate that goes back a lot further than you might think. You know, it's always interesting, because I always say I find people in the past aren't very much different to us. All right, they don't have iPhones, but, you know, in people, how they think and how society breaks down, as some people are for this and other people are against that, it doesn't change that much over the years. Just the arguments do and what we're arguing about, but there's always people who are kind of the hang 'em and flog 'em sort of, yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's a bit going, oh, hang on, is this really right? Is it? And asking questions.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about that. I suppose when you look back on this, You see people using these lots of metal, lots of ropes to try and get answers out of these people. And so you think, because it's so primitive, they got the right answers, and we are here today because they got the right answers.
Mm.
But you never really step back and go, well, did they push it too far and just get someone to answer something so they could get out of that situation? Very much like what they do today. And you have that very grey area where it's not a correct answer, it's not a wrong answer, they're just trying to get out of that situation. And I've never really thought about the medieval times and the 18th and 17th and 16th century where you would have that debate of, okay, we got information, but is this correct information? Mm. We now have to decipher this information that we have received.
Well, this is the other thing you find kind of, I think we think of past times being very, very barbaric, but actually the chance of you being firstly caught and then convicted and then being in the arena for torture was slim in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
But also they didn't use torture willy-nilly. It was quite reserved for very serious cases where they really felt they had to get a confession.
Mm-hmm.
Sedition and treason, assassination, that this is where you find a lot of accounts, and suspected heresy. You get the use of torture. You don't get generally tortured for doing a bit of shoplifting.
Yeah.
You know, that's not kind of how it worked. You may well end up in the stocks or in the pillory for that if you get caught. That's a bit of a different ball game to kind of, you know, using force to extract some information from you.
Yeah, you're not going to try to get the information of who stole that loaf of bread. That's not what it's for, is it?
No.
But there are other forms as well. Now, I'm guessing this is correct. It was, I think, used in Vietnam where they would have like GI soldiers over like bamboo, and they would slowly grow bamboo and it would work its way through the body and pop out the other side. Are you aware of that? It's like a sort of a slow impalement.
Yes, I've heard that, but again, kind of how true it is, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Though I know there was, generally, if you're looking for absolute cruelty, I think the modern world, you know, we lead the way.
Yeah,
in this sort of thing, we are horribly ingenious. Coming up with ways to make life miserable for each other. And certainly the kind of tortures that went on in various 20th century conflicts, prisons of war and in concentration camps, they make the medieval stuff look, and even the classical world stuff, look absolutely like amateur hour.
Yeah.
You know.
It's so precise though, isn't it?
Oh, yes, yes.
Some of it is really, I know, I hate to say it, but it's really well thought through.
Mm.
And it's like when we read a book or any sort of media and look at the Saw films. I know it's an easy one to go to, but sometimes you sit there and go, someone thought of this. Someone thought this through and then went, okay, this could kill this person this way or hurt someone this way, and how can I make this more gruesome?
Mm.
You know, we are absolute bastards, really, aren't we?
We are. We have no moral high ground to stand and look back on the past and judge people, you know.
No.
We need to get our own house in order first, to be honest.
Yeah. I'm just wondering about that bamboo, because I know bamboo grows quite quickly, and
I think Mythbuster did something on it, and
I think, it
was plausible, but again, I think actually historical accounts of it happening other than hearsay are a bit vague. I mean, I know I grew up in the early 70s and kind of a lot of torture stories got passed around were allegedly what the Japanese did to prisoners of war,
mm-hmm.
all of which were total bollocks.
Yeah.
You know, And Vietnam, I'm sure, generated a lot of similar horror stories. And so the bamboo growing through it just seems, it has that smack of being just over elaborate.
Well, okay, picture this. Someone has been tortured, they've been left on the floor, and there is a root of bamboo, and over the course of weeks, it has grown through a dead body.
Mm.
And someone has come along and gone, oh God, they're going to lay me down and grow that through me. And then they get away, and then that story builds from that. Yep, I might be wrong, but that could be a way that that story grows.
That sounds very plausible. I mean, a lot of these sort of stories do have a kernel of something. There is a seed from which they grow from. The resulting plant might look quite different from the original inspiration, but there is a root there somewhere.
Mm.
And I'd go along with that theory, because that's highly plausible, I think, of, somewhere in a camp, they found bodies that bamboo had grown through.
Yeah.
I think that's quite plausible to how that maybe that story started.
Yeah, it could be. Can I ask you about a couple of others as well? Yep. Then? Have you heard of the iron chair? Basically, a chair with lots and lots of sharp points. It'd be like a bed of nails, but you sit down in this chair.
Yeah, apparently they were used in the 1950s in America.
Really?
Yes, there's you can actually, it's in which Stephen King novel is. It's in It. It's based on something that is actually something that happened to him as a kid in the 50s, or one of his friends. Mm. When touring a police station, the sheriff showed them what they called a tramp's chair.
Okay.
It was a big chair with all, like, nuts and rivets. And basically, if a vagrant came into town, the police would pick him up, and they would strap them into the chair for the night. And basically let them go the next morning, and the tramp would be on their way and wouldn't come back to that town.
Weirdly enough, don't they do that in modern day London and other town centres? They put the tramp spikes outside buildings so they can't lay down and settle down for the night.
Yep. It's the same principle, really. Mm. It's a bit more subtle, but
it's evil, though, isn't it?
It is.
It really is so bad. They're just treated like pigeons.
Mm-hmm. Oh, basically, yeah. As I say, we don't really have a high horse to stand on and judge the past while being barbaric.
No.
That's the ugly truth, I'm afraid, folks.
Yeah. Another one I read about is it Ling Chi? Death by a Thousand Cuts? Now, this seems like it would be some sort of torture where you extract as much pain from the person without killing them, and see how many cuts you can get through this person and get the information out from them, slowly bleeding them out, but not to the point where you're actually bleeding them out that they're going to pass out and then die. So you lots and lots of little cuts, but it will result in a death.
Mm.
I'm sure that is a thing. And what I read here, executioners would test their skills by trying to prolong the torture for as long as possible.
Very much, yes. I mean, it's an ancient Chinese torture, and it is, again, historically well accounted for.
Mm.
But again, it is elaborate, but it's also simple.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Of that kind of very easy to carry out. Again, don't need 4 ton of ironmongery and a vat of WD-40.
Oh, you can just imagine the torturer rocking up into one of these medieval places, and you can just hear him coming from 3 miles away because of all the iron that he's dragging behind him. They're like, oh no, he's coming. We can hear him coming. I was doing a little read around. Now, an article I did find was on the New York Times. Now, I don't know whether that's a good place to find something or what, but there was a guy who was tortured in Guantanamo Bay, and he drew some pictures of how he was interrogated and tortured, and some of them are harrowing. So you have the sleep deprivation, which we've spoken about, and putting him in certain positions so he doesn't sleep or keeping him awake. They also had a large confinement box. So what they would do, they would put you in a big box with a bucket, and the bucket would be used for you to use it for your waist, but you wouldn't be able to stand up in that box. So you'd have to sit down, and I can sit down for as long as anyone wants me to, as long as even if I'm sat on a really comfy sofa, I will fidget like a bastard. So I wouldn't last too long in this. But I've had my fair share of sitting on the throne for quite some time. You're like, oh, hang on, I've been on here for quite some time, haven't I? I better get up. And you're like, oh, my legs are dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would not be nice at all. But he also said they put you into a small confinement box as well, where you cannot stretch out at all. It's that restrictiveness. That would be absolute agony after some time, wouldn't it? Because you do need to stretch. You do need to feel that freedom and stretch your arms out, stretch your legs out. It's horrible not being able to stretch your legs out sometimes, isn't it?
Well, this is it. Most people have been on a coach journey or a long-haul flight, and you've had a taste of what's that like.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can get up and go for a stroll down the aisle and get yourself some relief, but then you think, I've got to go. What if you couldn't, though? Just imagine that.
Yeah.
And you didn't have a nice padded seat with a telly built into it. People bringing you booze at the press of a button.
And you're paying for it as well.
Yes.
Oh, dear. What other ones did he have in here? Oh, God, that's horrible. Short shackling, where I think it's just manacles, and yeah, you're basically manacled to a radiator, so you can't really move. Putting in stress positions as well, where your arms are up high on railings and you're on tippy toes, and it's all about stressing yourself out, isn't it? But the other one was called walling, where they just slam your head against a wall. And once you fall down, they pick you up, dust you off, slap you around the face, and then they smack your head against the wall again. And this is modern day UN countries doing this.
Oh, yes, yes. As I said, I think the modern day tortures are probably far worse because we've industrialized it.
Yeah,
it's done in the full light of 21st century knowledge of anatomy and psychology and biology and physics. You know what I mean? It's now it's the horrible precision of it, coupled with the barbarity, which makes it a particularly heinous to my mind.
Yeah,
far more so than people in primitive societies where they didn't have the benefits of this knowledge, and life was a lot more hand to mouth.
Yeah,
not excusing things in the past, but you know what I mean. It's kind of from judging the morality, I think kind of modern day torture, I think he's just worse because it's done in the light of more knowledge. And supposedly in a more progressive era.
Yeah, there's something very barbaric about it. It's getting down to a person that cannot retort to it, because if you do fight against it, you know you're just going to get it 10 times worse, don't you?
Well, this is it.
Yeah, he's absolutely. I think he's terrifying. And you mentioned about Mythbusters as well. They did one on water torture, as far as I remember. I think it was it Carrie that used to be on there?
Yes, yeah.
And
I think
they set her up to have the drip on the forehead.
Mm.
And she, I think I'm remembering this right, she said that, yeah, she, I think she did a couple of hours with it just dripping on her head and couldn't take it anymore and had to be removed. And that was with still with the knowledge of, I can call this off at any time.
Yeah.
So imagine not being able to call it off at any time. It's very hard to experiment with this stuff because you know we wouldn't be able to test these things without...
you've got the knowledge of a safety net.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. No banana safe word or anything like that, is there? We couldn't test water torture nowadays. We just do it.
Yes.
We just do the waterboarding and hope that they don't drown. And, okay, there's one thing. When I was a kid, I used to put a flannel over my face and just pour water over the front of my face. And I thought that was hilarious. And I thought it'd be easy. And, looking back on it now, it's like, no, I would not survive anything like this. It's just the way that your breathing is restricted. It's so claustrophobic as well. It's that primal thing of, I don't want to be in the water. I'm being forced into the water. I don't want to be there. It just goes against absolutely everything that your body wants to do.
Well, that's it. I think it kind of plays on the inverse of what I call the red button syndrome, which is kind of a quirk of the human psyche that, you know, if you put someone in a room with a red button and say, don't press it, most people will fight very hard not to press the button.
Mm-hmm.
It's just because you've told them not to, they will want to. And I think in torture is that kind of thing of kind of, it's because this is going to happen to you whether you like it or not.
Yep.
Instantly it sets off like a psychological level of torture. That, you know, it's kind of that's where it begins.
Mm-hmm.
In that kind of that loss of agency of and then that's when it becomes frightening. And I say that's why you can't simulate that in a test, because you always have that, you've got the get out of jail free card, so you never really lose that agency.
No, that's true. With all that being said, then, are there any others that we haven't mentioned that you want to bring up at all?
One I'd like to bring up, because it's one everyone knows, but no one, everyone knows the wrong version of it, is the famous torture of witches, the swimming of witches, as they called it.
Ah, okay.
Now, everyone's heard of this or a variant of it. And it's always offered up as the kind of the cruelty of the past, because it was like a damned if you do, damned if you don't. The idea was that witches could naturally float. The water itself would reject them, as they were the tools of the devil, and they were unnatural. Okay.
Really? Oh, okay. Right.
So the swimming of witches, what they used to do was that the suspected witch would be placed on a rope and or on a ducking stool, and they'll be held under the water. Now, if the witch then floated up, she was a witch, and you'd go on trial and you'd be burned.
Yeah.
But if you stayed under the water, you're innocent. But, you know, obviously you drowned, but you went to heaven, so that was okay.
But your name was clear.
Yes, yeah. And so it was kind of like everyone offers it. And there's similar witchcraft ordeals for proving a witch. They have this same, you know, damned if you do, damned if you don't. You're going to wind up dead, whether you're innocent or guilty. It's just a matter of which way. Now, the thing is, the truth of it is that when you look into the historical record, the swimming of witches was against the law.
Okay.
This was very much vigilante justice, or I say justice, inverted commas. And the whole idea was that you dunked them and you saw if they floated or not. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is, you weren't supposed to hold them under, so they drowned. And actually, people got sent down and actually did get executed for drowning suspected witches by swimming them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, you've got to be very precise with that, haven't you?
Yeah. And the other thing is if they did float, the odds were, firstly, in England, you wouldn't be burnt. That wasn't the punishment for witchcraft. Mm. It was hanging. However, the majority of English witches, we went to a court, they would actually be acquitted because usually the judges were learned men who very much had the view, this is absolute bollocks. There's famously a judge said, are you telling me that this woman who can turn into a bird, why would she not do so and escape this court?
Mm-hmm.
And they had this idea about, say, the witches being sort of unnatural and light. The judges often used to use a related belief that, say, witches had no proper weight. And so they said, well, you know, if the suspected witch weighed less than the church Bible, which remember these big books, they could go free. And actually, as big as those books are, even the frailest old man or old crone often weighed more than a church Bible. So they got off scot-free. And the judge could prove, no, they're not a witch, you're wrong. Now, fuck off. and you find an extraordinary amount of skepticism, and a lot of these things you hear about the witch trials per se. Matthew Hopkins, the witch finder general, he wasn't appointed by the crown. He wasn't appointed by the church. He was self-appointed.
Yeah, I bet he was
like a vigilante. He went from town to town, and he was paid for finding witches by people practicing their own rough justice.
I bet he made a lot of money hunting witches and trying to prove witches as well. You know, if he finds one that floats, well, I found one. Pay me. Thank you very much. I'll move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Well, easy money.
I don't entirely sure what really happened to him, but certainly one story says that he actually ended up being swum as a witch himself, ironically.
I was going to ask you about that because the word witch tends to, for me anyway, in my head, it means a female.
Mm.
Was there a male equivalent of that?
Well,
are they classed as a witch?
Well, people always say the male witch is a warlock. Historically, however, witches could be male or female. There is a tendency to see them as female, partly due to fairy stories, but it was also there is a certain amount of medieval sexism. The big handbook for witch finding was a book called Malleus Maleficarum, which means the hammer of the witches, which was written by effectively a defroctor monk.
Yeah,
and in that book there's a lot of mad nonsense, and he particularly has it in for women. But as the thing was, there's another popular misconception. There's people think, you know, Malleus Maleficarum was used by the Inquisition. No, the Inquisition were banned from using it because they said, this is rubbish. And the Spanish Inquisition, for Christ's sake, when they looked into cases of witchcraft, they just generally found nothing going on, no proof of it, and said, this is lunacy, shut up. The book was supposedly endorsed by the Pope. The Pope said, no, it's not, and he banned it. so there's kind of it's very interesting that the past isn't how you think it is. There's a lot more skepticism, shall we say, about this stuff. You know, and it's kind of, some of the worst stuff are done by, shall we say, fringe groups. Well, having said that, there was a lot of witch trials in the times of James I, but that was kind of because it was suspected witches were plotting to assassinate him. So there was a political angle. Mm. And there was a lot of torture in which people ended up naming other people, and it just spiraled on and on of people accusing of being part of this witchcraft anti-monarchy conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
But this was one of the things, the Berwick witch trials, I think it was. But yeah, that was one of these things that it that kind of ended the sort of flirtation with using torture in England, because people said, look, this clearly got out of hand. People were just naming anybody to stop the torture. And, you know, we rounded up a lot of people on duff information obtained by force.
Mm. That's incredible.
I find it absolutely fascinating, because, as I say, we have this view that people in the past are credulous and barbaric, and yet you find a surprising amount of sort of compassion, reason, and, you know, skepticism, and people go, yeah, is this really right? Hang on, what are we doing here? And it does break down. There are some people always going, yeah, yeah, we'll do that. Yeah. And they'll go, I don't think so. No.
There are always going to be that minority of idiots that are just like, yeah, just burn them all. But it's nice and it's sobering to know that there were people with right heads on their shoulders and thinking through these things carefully and concisely and going, well, no, there's no such thing as witches. Come on. Let's not be silly. Because in my head, I look back on all the media that I've swallowed up over the years and think, well, if you took a wrong turn, someone shouted witch, and then you ended up getting dunked. And that was it. You were gone. There was no ifs, buts, or maybes about it. You were a witch. You drowned or you burned. That was it. So it's nice to hear that there were some level heads. And we didn't lose half our population just because someone had like a vendetta against someone because they hung their washing out and it obscured their view of the sun for that day. So, yeah, that's...
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, obviously, you know, terrible things did happen. But as I say, it's quite interesting. You know, you find most of the witches who went to trial in England were acquitted because the judges were basically going, don't waste my time with these bizarre claims of talking ferrets, you know, hexing your cattle.
I'm weirdly relieved about that. That's good. Thank goodness we're not absolute idiots in the past.
Well, no, this is it. I mean, it's, obviously there are times, you know, like any times you get moments of hysteria and, you know, where society just go a bit crazy. It's not where there's instability and these things sort of flare up, and looking at, say, the use of torture and witch trials and all that kind of typical medieval barbarism, you find it's not a constant everywhere all the time. It flares up in different countries in different centuries, and it's when there's a stress point in society, whether it's regime change or new ideas, or it's when, you know, there's a point of transition and society's feeling very shaky.
Yeah,
that's when the bad stuff comes out, and that's the lesson to be learned. Not that people in the past were stupid, but when people are threatened, when people are frightened, when people don't have stability, that's when we tend to get more barbaric in how we treat each other and become a bit more credulous and start looking to scapegoat and punish people.
Yeah.
That's the lesson, I think, there.
Feels like we've been going through that since about 2016. It's been on the build-up, and I don't know if we're on the way out of it at the moment, but I feel that we're in one of the moments, aren't we?
I think we are. We're increasingly in a polarised society, and I mean, it's probably a whole other podcast, but you'd be surprised the parallels to the events leading up to the Civil War that are going on now in the British political scene, where basically a small cabal of MPs in Parliament who are zealots are increasingly dictating an agenda over a couple of generations, and we're going down a path to extremism.
Yeah.
Because the you know, I say whole of the podcast, but guys, if you look at the history, the roundheads are not heroes. They were maniacs. They were a very, very destructive fascistic group who had their origins in Queen Elizabeth's time, who grew in power under James I and then brought the country to a crisis under Charles I, and we got the Civil War. And this is far too many parallels with the European research group, so-called the Brexit group, who are now effectively took over the cabinet and are extremely divisive and following a very dangerous agenda.
Yes. Absolutely. Well, to the ducking machine with all of them, I say. And no acquittals or anything like that. Let's just drown them all. If they don't drown, we'll burn them. And once they do drown, we will burn them. And once they're burnt, we will drown them again. Goodness. Right. Well, I think we'll bring it to a close there. Thank you so much, man. That was, I've learned so much. And I've got this weird fondness of the past didn't always get it wrong, and not just on the torture, but the actual reasoning behind putting people, like burning people and stuff like that. They actually thought these things through before they actually did it, or I hope they did anyway, at least. So at least I've drawn that from this. So thank you, man. I really do appreciate
it. My pleasure. As I say, the fast is a fascinating place, and a lot of what we've grown up with isn't actually quite right.
No.
And it's, as I say, not so different from us. That's just, you know, don't think we're different because we're in the 21st century. We're not.
No, we just wear cotton T-shirts instead now. That's what it is, really, right. Isn't it?
Just the scenery changes.
Yeah.
People are the same.
And what I have learned from this as well is if you see like an oldie drawing on the internet, don't just assume that was drawn at that time when it was being used for the torture. Do a bit of research. Dive onto the internet. The internet can be your friend. Do a bit of research on what you're looking into, and you will find the truth behind these sort of things. You know, if there's not a lot to be found, then it's probably someone made it up maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, stuck it on the internet, and it spread like wildfire. That's the original source.
Exactly. Always check your sources.
Yeah.
If it's a bunch of other web pages saying top 10 medieval tortures and or some self-published Dave's Big Book of Torture Down the World, it's probably not kosher. There's no actually historical references and documents and, you know, court records quoted, things like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad that you pointed this out to me. Very silently, but, you know, it has been pointed out to me, so that's been good. Okay, so with that being said, you do have your own show on the internet. Do you want to point people in that direction?
Yes, if you go to hypnagoria.com, you can find all my many works. I have my regular weekly show, Hypnagoria, where I talk about weird and wonderful and delve into the roots of horror and whatnot. I have From the Great Library of Dreams, which is my readings podcast, where I read old weird fiction. And with my wife, Teresa, we do Commentary Club, where we basically talk through a selection of films on a fairly random schedule.
I was recently listening to the Ice Road again.
That's probably the angriest I've been on a podcast in a long time.
I could tell. Yeah, you can hear it. There's moments. I think Teresa got up at one point and just poured herself another glass of wine. It's like, oh no, I can't do this anymore. And we're only 40 minutes into this film.
It's a fun show to do, especially the crap films. Cause
yeah,
generally, one of us will start being the calm one. One will be the angry one, and we usually switch places about halfway through.
Yeah. Yeah, I've noticed that. Cool. So where can everyone find all that sort of stuff again?
It's just hypnagoria.com. That's your one-stop shop for everything I do, with all my links to all my socials and whatnot. The ones I do anyway, because I'm old. Don't look for TikTok. I'm too old.
TikTok. Jeez, no, no, I'm not doing that either. No. You can catch me over at road2media.com and on the Blacktop podcast as well, along with Jim.
Indeed. Where
it's like a four people talking about films. And I don't know what's on there at the moment because I don't think this is going out for a week or so. But yeah, go over to blackdogpodcast.com and download at least four. No, there's over 100 episodes there now. Yep. The old stuff has been like hidden away in a safe until later days, I think.
Karma times.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, once again, thank you very much, Jim, for this.
My pleasure.
And it just leaves me to say, please leave quietly. This is a residential area. Stand in the shadow.